Hello there! Welcome to the International Business Podcast, a show for those who work across time zones, borders, and cultures. I'm your host, Leonardo, from Shanghai, but let's make it simple and just call me Leo. We also have a new co-host, Stefano, based in Paris. Coming up on today's episode.
If you're moving to a country, you've got to and you're going to take up, for example, a management role, you've got to understand how people locally like to be managed. And again, not just what you've done in the country that you come from and assuming that, you know, that will work everywhere in the world. Actually, two out of three expat couples experience some kind of marital stress. And the divorce rate amongst expats is 50% higher than it is, you know, for non-expats. And this is why. And this is how you can prepare to avoid that.
Patty helps expatriates succeed by supporting people working in multicultural environments to be better informed, to be more self-aware, and less likely to always blame others. You can find more details about Patty, including a link to her book Cultural Chemistry, in the show notes. Now, let's get started. Hi, Patty. I'm glad to have you on. Welcome to an International Business Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Leo.
And I do have a question for you, Patty. Why would you define yourself as an international professional?
I think I'm the side of international professionals that a lot of people don't see. I'm a bit like the Queen's dresser. So every time the Queen goes to some multicultural event, she's got people advising her on what to wear and how to stand and, you know, how to behave. And obviously she's been doing this for years now, so she's an expert. But behind every successful diplomat is someone like me who is instructing people how to behave, how to match their behavior, dress, etiquette, everything to the situation that they're going into. So I am an international professional in that I'm like the shadow that goes with these people on their international travels, even though I don't necessarily go on them myself. I'm the wind beneath their wings, to quote that horrible song.
So let's get to the, I would say, cultural differences, Patty. So becoming more aware of and also more comfortable with cultural differences is not an opt-in. I would say it is a given. But can you tell us more about the approach called the four R's?
So when I wrote a book a few years ago about bridging cultural gaps, and I wanted to include a sort of self-help model in that. I didn't just want to write a book about cultural disasters that had befallen people. I wanted to have a model that people could use to improve their cross-cultural communication. And the model I came up with, the four R's, stand for rewards, research, reflect, and reach out. And they're the basis of my coaching and training now. And rewards is really that classic goal setting that you often do at the beginning of coaching. So you get people incentivized to put some time and effort into this. And the rewards are enormous, ranging from personal through to the professional. Then the research, well, given your situation, what do you need to know? Are you pitching a product at a new client, in which case you have to have a good understanding of the way that they like to buy and not just assume that they like to buy in the way that you like to sell. If you are moving to a country, you've got to and you're going to take up, for example, a management role, you've got to understand how people locally like to be managed. And again, not just what you've done in the country that you come from and assuming that, you know, that will work everywhere in the world. Reflection is really about self-awareness. So it's thinking about how did I respond to that situation? If I were in a meeting and somebody had said that they would do something and they didn't, or nobody else sort of spoke out in the meeting, even though I asked them all to, and I was really frustrated at the end of it. So it's reflecting back on your behavior. Could I have handled that a bit better? Why did I respond in that way? And by this stage, people are often feeling like, well, there are so many differences between us that, you know, actually this is going to be a lot harder than I thought. So, you know, should I just pack up and go home? Or, and I said, no, you don't need to do that. But you need to think about how to reach out to people, how to connect with people in spite of the differences. And one of the first things there is to actually look for what you have in common. So rather than focus on the negatives and the potential problems, look for what you have in common so that you can build rapport and build connections over the fact that, you know, you both play golf or you both love Venezuela or, you know, whatever it is, that you find something that connects you. Because actually people who are of a share a sort of profession and an education level are actually much more likely to get on with each other than people who just come from the same country but otherwise have nothing in common.
And I guess, Patty, that the four R's are all equally important. But at the end of the day, I think it's difficult to manage the four of them. If you had, let's say, to start with one, which of the four would be the one to start with, to focus on, I mean?
Yeah, reflect, definitely. So because I suppose if you've got to that stage of even starting to look at, you're already aware of the rewards. So that you can, you know, motivate your team better, you can build friends locally, whatever the reward is for you. And reflection, I think, is so much more important almost than anything else, because of unconscious bias, because of the way that we've been brought up to sort of think about things, we look at things and we don't even know that we're judging them. But so often we judge other people's behaviors by our own standards or our own values. And we say, oh, well, you know, that's really rude. You know, they don't make eye contact. They don't follow up calls. You know, they never want to have lunch with me, whatever the issue is. And we think, well, you know, if they were doing that in my country, I'd think that was really rude. And actually, it's not relevant what people think in your country. If you're in someone else's country, what matters is what people in that country do and think.
So one of the biggest difficulties for global employees is adapting themselves to the management style of a new country. What advice would you give them?
So I have to say that actually the best thing that any organization can do if they are sending expatriates is not just to prepare the expatriate, but also to prepare the receiving end, if you like. I'll give you an example. I worked with a young Chinese woman a couple of years ago in Australia, and she had been identified as having high potential and sort of fast-tracked, moved over to Australia. And when she arrived, it was all much, much harder than anyone anticipated. And I got a call when she'd been there for about 6 months saying, can you come in? Things aren't really working out. She hadn't had any cultural training to prepare her for work in Australia. And the team that she worked with hadn't had any preparation for her arrival either. So they were doing this. She was the only girl on the team. Being Australian men, they talked a lot about sport, which she felt completely sort of excluded from. They spoke loudly, they spoke quickly, they interrupted each other, they used quite colourful language. Sometimes there were a number of behaviours that they did, which made her feel more and more excluded. And she was insecure and unsure of herself. And they'd suddenly turn to her and say, oh, Ying, you know, what do you think about this? And she'd be sort of like a rabbit in the headlights and say, oh, you know, and then they'd just move on. And then she sort of heard people saying, oh, Ying never speaks anything, you know, in meetings. I don't know why they brought her over. She doesn't seem to have that much potential, really. And so her confidence started to go. And then that once you get on that downward spiral, you know, it happens really quickly. So she was really very withdrawn and unhappy by the time I started working with her. So look, in my dream world, both sides I would have some training. And I kind of use the metaphor of, if you imagine two people meeting on a bridge, and if they both meet in the middle, you know, they're actually going to start having a conversation much faster than if one of them just stands there and waits for the other to come and join them. But so back to your question, which is what should companies do? I mean, yes, they need to teach people about cultural differences. People need to be aware of what cultural differences are, both in the social life sort of and in the workplace. But expats really need to learn to become expats as well. And that's a whole skill set in itself. So, and I work with, you know, individuals, couples, families, and every move is different, every family is different, and there'll be different challenges for each of them. But I suppose after years of moving myself, and, you know, from the age of 8, I sort of moved around, and I've been, you know, a teenager, I've been a what they call a trailing spouse, you know, I've seen my mother as this sort of trailing spouse, I've been, you know, working professional, I've been in lots of people's shoes, you know, at some time over my life. And what I know is that it's hard. And I don't think that HR or global mobility departments do their employees any favors by giving them a sort of sugar-coated version of it. So when you work with me, you get sort of warts and all. And I'm going to say, look, you know, actually 2 out of 3 expat couples experience some kind of marital stress. And the divorce rate amongst expats is 50% higher than it is, you know, for non-expats. And this is why. And this is how you can prepare to avoid that.
The audience cannot look at us now because we're looking at each other on a video, but the audience can't. Let's talk, Patty, about body talk. Tell us about some stark differences between business cultures.
I think in many ways, actually, body language has a role, but I'm not sure that it's any greater than the sort of communication style differences. I mean, yes, there are gestures that people can make, like crossing fingers or that, you know, the A-OK sign when you put your sort of forefinger and thumb together and make a circle, which is very rude in many LATAM countries. But, you know, in the UK and in America, it just means like, yeah, it's all OK. So and there are things like eye contact, making too much eye contact, not making enough eye contact. Personal space is one that often provokes friction, sort of excuse the pun, but, you know, people feeling that someone else is in their personal space and standing too close to them. And, you know, just that's where the self-awareness piece comes in, that if we're chatting and I keep stepping closer to you because that's my comfort level and you keep stepping back from me because I'm in your space, it's up to me to notice that, hey, Leah's not comfortable when I do this. I must kind of stand still because otherwise I'm clearly threatening him or imposing on him. And I remember years ago, someone said the funniest thing they'd ever seen was a room full of Brazilian and Japanese business people. And the Brazilians were kind of leaning into the Japanese and, you know, wanting to hug them. And the Japanese just kept stepping back. And by the end of the evening, all the Japanese were pinned up against the wall and the Brazilians were kind of leaning on them. So it's things like that more than necessarily sort of gestures and, you know, smiling. For some people, smiling is something that you do between friends, but not so much in business because business is serious. But really, it's things like, I think more of an issue is things like the speed at which people talk and whether they allow there to be silence in the conversation. So lots of Westerners are not comfortable with silence. You know, in most Western cultures, silence is an indication that you're not happy with something and you're thinking, how can I tell this person that I'm really not impressed or, you know, not happy with what they said? But in cultures like Japan and China too, to some extent, silence is a means of communication. You're actually saying something when you're saying nothing. So having the awareness to notice that, oh, every time I speak, you know, there's this long pause. That much, even if you don't know, you know, it's about looking around for clues. I call it sort of, you know, discovering your inner Sherlock Holmes. It's every time you go into a situation that is different for you, you look for what is why, for what's different, and you wonder why that is. So you have this curiosity, and then you can ask people, because people love to talk about their culture. And if you ask it in a polite way, I've noticed that this happens. You know, why do you do that? People will happily share that with you.
Italians wink a lot.
Right.
And I'll tell you something, Patty, that when I moved to China, even in business situations, sometimes I winked. You know, maybe someone does something good. It doesn't have to be a joke all the time. It could be, you know, like my colleague of mine did something good, or I don't know, something funny happened and I was winking, I mean, for me normally, but according to my colleagues, a lot. And after, I think, 3 or 4 months, I was in a company where I was the only foreigner at the beginning when I moved to China. And it took them like 3 or 4 months to a couple of colleagues to tell me, why do you wink to us all the time? And I was like, what do you mean? And winking for all my colleagues, it always meant something sexual. And I didn't know that. I mean, at least it wasn't definitely my aim, but In that moment, I realized that, yeah, what was kind of normal for me, even a business setting, was not upsetting, but it was definitely weird for most of my colleagues.
Yeah, yeah. And we get that a lot when people go up and, you know, they put their arm around someone's shoulders, for example. Or in France, you know, colleagues will kiss each other good morning most mornings. In many countries in South America, people will hug each other. So, and then they move to another country where there is a distance always maintained between people. And you know, suddenly they feel like, oh, everything I'm doing is wrong here. And you know, the lack of confidence sets in so quickly, at least hopefully it does. If you're that kind of person who just, you know, crashes on through and doesn't notice, well, then I don't know that anything can help you. But hopefully, actually, people do develop quite quickly this sense of sort of walking on thin ice, thinking, you know, when am I going to go through the ice? And that's when they hopefully would start to look for help.
So in cross-cultural situations, it is often mistakenly assumed that if two people are speaking the same language, like you and I are doing right now, there will be no cultural differences. So is speaking in English the antidote to everything?
Oh, no. I mean, I think even if people, well, obviously, if you've got one person who is speaking English as their native tongue and the other person who's got it as a second language, that's a huge amount of extra stress and strain on that second person. But if you think about, for example, Americans, British people and Australians, there are ways in which they use language that are unique to their country and aren't necessarily understood in the same way in other countries. So, you know, Americans use a lot of sporting metaphors, for example. So, you know, when something's really going well, you know, someone's behind the eight ball or they're on the touchline or, you know, they've got it through to the keeper or whatever. And people might be going, you know, like, what? Sort of, you know, in Britain, we can be quite passive aggressive, you know, like, interesting, when actually we don't find it interesting at all. Or, I wonder if you could do a little more work on that, which really means this is absolutely hopeless as it is, you really, you know. And so an American might think, oh, well, okay, I just need to do a little bit more work on this and, you know, then we'll be fine. And the Australians can be very direct, and they can also use quite a lot of colourful language, so which can be off-putting for people who are not used to that kind of language in the workplace. So I mean, there's three examples just kind of off the top of my head. So
I love the passive-aggressive attitude of British, and I guess that lots of people don't get it, right?
No, and I think certainly, you know, the whole interesting thing is something that people really struggle with. And I was coaching he was a Hungarian, actually, and arriving in the UK. And he said to me, you know, why do they say it is interesting when I don't really think they are interested? So, you know, why don't they just come out and say, actually, I don't really like this? And I think, well, you know, it's all to do with what motivates people's behavior. And in the UK, people are really motivated by being polite to people. And, you know, and in America, I'd say, you know, they're really motivated by being really friendly to people, but also, you know, being seen to be confident. So it's, you know, it's what drives people's behavior. So things like, you know, just as a sort of off the piece, if you like, but things like soft handshakes that people give in places like Vietnam and Thailand. And people from Western cultures often say, oh, you know, the men there, they give such soft handshakes, you know, they're really sort of a bit insipid, you know, and they kind of look down on those soft handshakes. But I say, but actually, in those countries, it's so important to not be aggressive. And people hand over business cards using both hands to show that they are not holding a weapon, you know, and actually, and that's what I love about this, is the kind of why behind the what. And I think if people start looking into that sort of why, then a lot of these things start to make so much more sense.
Patty, are you the person whose bag is packed hours before you leave, or the one making last-minute phone calls all the way to the airport?
It might be packed, sort of, but then at the last minute I'll go, oh, I don't want that T-shirt, I want another T-shirt, and I'll sort of fling everything all over the place. And no, I'm definitely the one sort of doing everything at the last minute. But I think, see, I was talking about time management with someone the other day, and I said, well, you know, arguably, I manage time really well because I get loads of things done in anyone else's 5 minutes, they'll do one thing and I'll do 10 things. But I'm not a very good timekeeper. I'm always trying to cram too many things in. But I do get a lot done. So.
I've got one final question that I ask everyone who comes on the show. Tell us about one memorable moment, and you can pick between, I don't know, a successful, a funny, or even a catastrophic episode. Your pick, Patty.
So I was going to tell you a catastrophic one, and one which still hurts me sort of after years, and it was so awful. But then I thought, no, I don't want to do that. What I'd like to tell you about is my death by a thousand cuts. So a bad moment that keeps recurring for me, which is that I go to talk to people about the service that I provide and how just a few hours with me can have a really transformative effect on the personal and professional success of an expat. And they go, yeah, we probably don't really need it. They've been to that place. They've been to the office a few times before, you know, or they've traveled there on holiday a few times. So I think really what really hurts sort of, and what I still feel get so angry about really is that people don't get the value that expatriate coaching provides and, you know, and cross-cultural training, the whole cross-cultural piece. I think people don't get the difference that it can make. So except occasionally, well, they do. Obviously, I've got clients, I've got work. There are people working in this space, but it was interesting at a CETAR, which is the Society for Intercultural Education Training and Research, who have a conference every 6 months sort of in different places. And there was a session at one of the last CETAR conferences I went to called, it was something like, why don't interculturalists have more work? And I think everyone in the room thought it was just them. And they talked about this, basically this lack of acknowledgement of the difference that it can make. And I think we were all frustrated, but we all felt better that it wasn't us sort of so. But there's a good side to this story as well, which is that sometimes you just get these lovely, lovely thank yous from people. And I had an email a few years ago, and this woman said, I realize this is out of the blue. You trained us 2 years ago to move from America to Nebraska. And she said, I've got to write and tell you that the advice that you gave me and my husband was the best start that anyone could have given us to our time here. And I know it's made such a difference to our life here and to my husband's work. And I just wanted to say thank you. And I was like, oh, that's so lovely to hear that, you know, so, and that makes it all worthwhile.
And before we go, Patty, after listening to this episode, who should connect with you? And tell us a little bit more about your current role.
I know you don't want me to say everyone, but honestly, anyone who's working with someone from somewhere else could benefit from just a conversation with me, you know. So I'm particularly interested in, I like working with expats. I really love the sort of combination of coaching and training that I give to expats. So telling them sort of what they need to know, but also helping them be comfortable with that. So I'm interested in working with expats, ideally before they go, otherwise kind of, you know, later, or someone who was an expat 3 years ago and still feels like they're walking on thin ice. So, but I also work with organizations who've got offices in different countries and are trying to run sort of remote teams. Anywhere, I suppose, where cultural differences might divide people and stop them from being as productive as they could be. And, you know, many of the people that you've had on your podcasts talk about this, and that they see, as you know, we see as cultural trainers, we really see the potential for fireworks, and people on the inside don't necessarily. And, you know, my business is called Cultural Chemistry because I'm interested in what makes people bond and how we can help people to bond rather than repel or even explode. So yeah, I mean, in people interested in international business expansion, you know, selling to new markets, dealing with new suppliers, just a little bit of information can go such a long way. And I'm also really interested in trying to sell more copies of my book. I know the details are in the show notes, but I've written a very practical guide to connecting with people across cultural gaps. And I referenced academic work that other people have done, but it's not a dry academic tome. It's a very chatty, conversational, easy to read, humorous book. And it will give people very simple strategies.
I have a copy, and I thank you for that, Patty. And I definitely recommend to all the audience to actually get this book. And one key finding from your book, Patty, what would that be? One or two sentences. Why should people read your book?
Because it distills the information, the hard work that a lot of other people have done in the whole sort of intercultural arena. I think it distills it into a really easy, workable model. And once you, the 4 hours is such a logical process. You know, you start off thinking, oh, you know, what's in it for me? That's reality. You know, we all want a carrot to have dangled in front of us. So, you know, what's in it for me? What do I need to know? How am I going to handle this? And how can I make a good job of this and connect with people? So, and then, you know, once you've done that a few times, it just becomes automatic. And that's the best that we can hope for.
Patty, I want to thank you for your insights. Thank you for joining us on the International Business Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Subscribe today to listen to more international business stories. We have new guests every Monday. Connect with us on LinkedIn, info in the show notes. See you next week. Cheers.